So hi, I'm Christina Hedrick, and I teach Greek dance in New York City and sometimes online. I am the founder of a business called Yamas. Most of your listeners rather probably don't need to have that explained to them, but you know, it means cheers, derived from to our health, emphasis on the health, but also the fun and the cheers, equally important. And I identify as a researcher, independent researcher, writer, literally, like I get paid to write copy for companies, got to pay the bills. And I teach yoga and meditation.
Excellent.
Tell us a little bit about how you got into dance and kind of your metamorphosis into this, you know, into what you're doing today and everything like that.
Sure. So I should also firstly say thanks for having me. I'm very stoked to be here. I've listened to a lot of episodes of Shiktosh and you've heard a lot of my teachers and friends come on here. So it's very cool. How did I get into dance? Very traditional diaspora experience. I was 4 or 5. I grew up in Virginia. I'm a Newport News church kid. So I grew up dancing in that parish, and I feel very indebted in a not Greek guilt way to that program for really cultivating such a strong foundation for dance in me. So I started really young and just kept going with it my whole life. In tandem, I did take, you know, ballet and other forms of dance. So in general, movement and dance has always been a really big part of my life. And I grew up doing, you know, the whole HDF thing and going to competition and performing at the festival and different cultural events around Virginia. So it was really just, it was just something I never questioned doing. And I always really loved it. Like I remember as a little kid, I would like draw the Thracian costumes that the older girls wore. I was obsessed with the costumes and the music, and I would watch like the Dora Stratu tape that we had, that my Yaya had. I was entranced by it naturally. It was never something that had to be like sold to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like that's kind of a very common theme. Well, actually, I think there's two themes. One, like the instructor these days who was the troublemaker dancer. So there's a few people who have been on the show. Right, exactly. And then I think also kind of this like entanglement from an early age where you're just sort of like when you said the you know, video that you watched and the tape, like I can remember kind of watching the same things of these like slightly awkward dance groups being videotaped in Greece. They were great, right? But in these like random areas and like the dubbing, I don't, you know, we would go to like Greek music and video in Astoria and just buy all the tapes we could buy, right?
Yeah. But
it's good memories. So teaching in New York, and we'll get back to kind of like the yoga movement connection too. Where are you teaching and who are you teaching with, or talk to us a little bit about that.
So I'm teaching a lot at the moment, and I will preface this by saying that I started just teaching on my own. I felt like there was a little bit of a void to be filled for there to be a fun, accessible class for adults. And then I did later find out that some of those existed. But at the time it was like, I couldn't find it. Like I was searching for Greek dance. I was starting to really miss it. I missed what I had with Newport News because I had gone back and danced with them in like 2016, 17 and stuff. And I was like, I want this feeling. And I also wanted to create a Greek dance class that people could come and like I said, if you're afraid of Greek dance or you have like Greek dance trauma, like you can come take my class and it'll be okay. So because I have this business Yamas and I've been doing an assortment of workshops under the umbrella of said business, I was like, well, why wouldn't I do something with dance? Because to me, dance is inextricably linked to quote unquote wellness, which is a multi-billion dollar industry at this time. And I felt like, well, why couldn't I do this under the Yamas umbrella? You know, it's a form of movement, community, connection, etc. So no one really gave me permission. I just started doing it. And then through that, I started getting asked to teach. So people either liked my classes or they heard good things. So I started getting asked by people to prepare for their weddings. Like I've helped a lot of couples and their families. And then it evolved into more like programs asking me. So I started teaching pre-COVID, and then obviously during COVID, there was not a whole lot of Greek dance happening. And then post-COVID, since then, I've been teaching at the Brooklyn Cathedral, Saints Constantine and Helen. I teach all three of their kids groups. I'd say it's more like a nascent program, but like I'm trying to lay a foundation there. And then the Hian Federation and Astoria also brings me in to do just open level adult classes, which is really fun. And then I also co-founded with, I guess, Father Chrysostomos, a group for young adults called Kiklos on the Upper East Side. Mm-hmm. So it's also under the Archdiocesan Cathedral, the Upper East Side. But that was sort of to fill this gap where Father Chrysostomos is very into Greek dance. He goes and judges choral sometimes. Mm-hmm. And we had seen each other at FDF. And he's like, I've been wanting to start this young adult group. I'm like, cool, let's do it. Why not? Like, how can you have such a big church community and they didn't have, you know, a dance group? So the idea for that also was, you know, not to compete with any of the existing programs because it's all very harmonious, but to fill this niche where there are all these open level adult classes. And then this group, Kiklos, whether it's, you know, under me or someone else in the future, the idea is that like, it's more like a group. So you need to come to practice. We're going to perform. I move a lot faster in that class than I do in my other ones. It's more like, okay, I'm going to go over it a couple of times and then like hop in, let's go. So it's a different sort of pace and intention. And that group tends to attract, it's actually a total mixed bag. We bill it as intermediate advanced. So we do get a lot of people who, as you could probably guess, New York's a really transient city, a lot of move-ins. So a lot of my dancers grew up in like the West Coast, for example, and like grew up doing FDF and then now live in New York City as young adults. And they're like, okay, I miss Greek dance.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So great that you took the initiative to do that and how well it's worked out. That's
well, thank you. It's still very much a baby. It's a baby. I don't want to paint it like I the more I learn, the more I am increasingly humbled. So it's a baby. It's a baby for sure.
And I would say working with Father, he's amazing. And when he got his position at the cathedral, I think I messaged him and I was like, you are like the perfect person for this job because he's so cool. He's so down to earth and he's so knowledgeable. Like he's just a person who you can go to for everything. You know, so I what a great priest to be able to work with.
Totally. Because he's very engaged. He loves the community and he loves creating events for the community and he creates really fun events. So he's definitely a force. So props to Father Jesus.
I remember, I mean, I'll like watch his Instagram. I'm like, who manages your church social calendar, Father? Like he has all these cool flyers. I'm like, I bet you he's on Canva doing a lot of that on his own because he's just so cool.
Father, I tell him all the time, I'm like, are you okay? How do you do so much?
I know. I love that. That church is special to me. I mean, it's a beautiful cathedral. It's where my parents were married almost 50 years ago. It'll be 50 years in May. So
congrats.
So when he got the job there, I was like, oh my gosh, that's just great.
I feel very grateful that I was tapped for it. And again, whether it's me or whoever like continues it on into the future, I think it's I think this idea of there to be like a group out of New York that goes to FDF and or HDF is a cool thing because right now there isn't one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think to your point, New York is super transient and there are so many people there who want to continue and want to do what they did. So, you know, why not give the people what they want and have them also connect, you know, to like their church family, if they go to the cathedral or not, you know, even if they aren't members there or whatever it might be. But I love that.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because New York is very different and I could go off on a tangent here. Maybe I'll just do that. So pause me if I'm getting too tangential, but New York City churches don't really, as you know, have like the tradition of Greek dance in the way that they, a lot of other churches and communities don't. Obviously there's GAFs. Like, I would be remiss not to mention and give a shout out to GAFs that have, they've been around for a very long time. And, and they do a lot of amazing work. So I would never come on here and say there's no Greek dance in New York, because that's objectively false and also unfair to a lot of the amazing dancers in New York. But what I found in my teaching is that there are also a lot of people who like grew up in this area, didn't really do Greek dance, which is why I've personally had this niche open up in front of me that I didn't like ask for. It just kind of happened, of like a lot of people who, and I don't mean this in like a bad way, they don't know much about Greek. They just didn't do it. Like, it's just not in the culture. And I know a lot of the Silogi used to have groups, and some of them still sort of do. We're trying to do that now at the Hian Federation, like revive that. They have costumes. They used to have a group. The parents all say, we remember, we all used to come here and dance. And, but it's not, it kind of died out. And now there's this little sort of renaissance of dance, I think, happening in New York, which is cool, but there's a lot of groundwork and education that is going to have to take place for these programs to turn into viable programs.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that dance goes beyond high school and goes beyond Goya.
You know, people are busy here. That's the biggest challenge, getting people to commit. And I my personal theory is that's one reason New York doesn't have that massive culture of it, because obviously people are busy everywhere, but this is a busy city. And getting a transient career focused network of people to come to Greek dance, it's asking a lot of them. And I say to people when they come, I'm like, thank you. I know you could be 100 other places tonight. So thank you for showing up, because I could also be 100 other places tonight. And here we are dancing Bandushka. So, like, you know,
right. Let's make the best of it. That's awesome. That's awesome. Where do you find, like, how do you grow in your teacherness?
Oof. So a few ways. I'd say the first is that I am always seeking to learn. And I have like an instinct for research. I majored in history in college, so I've always just naturally wanted to research and dig and learn. I started even before I was really teaching. As a young adult, I was like, I miss Greek dance. And like, how do you learn? And it feels like it's kind of this world that, like you were saying, it stops at like high school or college. And then there seems to be this like in crowd that knows where everything is and knows what's happening and can feel a little gatekeepy. And you're like, but what happens in between? So again, I eventually just got frustrated. I realized no one's going to show me, so I have to seek it out on my own. So I've gone, for example, to like La Grafia in Montreal a couple of times, just on my own. And that was, both times were really incredible for me. And I just went, you know, on my own, no one was sending me, but I'm like, why wouldn't I go learn from these teachers? And then, you know, you start talking to people and then it opens up more things. And now I feel like I'm always finding out about things, because you start finding the teachers and becoming, you know, friends with them on Facebook or whatever. And Instagram has completely changed Greek dance, which is a tangent we could probably all talk on for a long time, of how different and accessible it is now and continues to be, which I think is really great. But honestly, seeking it out on my own. And then I am also very fortunate to have some people in my life who, whether they want this title or not, I will say I force them into mentoring me. So, you know, shout out to Stacey Perulis Zambas, who I reach out to all the time. Like, Stacey, I need a song for my kids. obviously to Dr. Bobby Garofalis, you know, Bobby is my teacher, was my teacher, is my teacher. And I, you know, I called Bobby the other day, like, hey, where can I find this thing for costumes? Lindsay Kivetos in Sacramento has been a great resource for me. So it's like slowly, slowly, because again, I used to really have this almost like bad attitude that like no one wants to share Greek dance information. And honestly, it kind of felt that way, because until people like respect you, like now, okay, it's a very niche Instagram, but I have this Instagram, I have a small following. People now are much warmer to me than they used to.
I'm really glad you said that. And we've talked about this before too, but you know, don't tell people, you know, don't be scared. You know, people are very, especially who are other teachers, they understand, they've been there. They're more than happy to share their resources. They're more than happy to help you in the ways that they can and are able to.
Sure. Mm-hmm. It's like amazing what La Grafia does, where they send you the package. I mean, that is huge. And I personally am like, you know, with Greeks, it's kind of like our blessing and our curse is like our our ability or non-ability to collaborate, you know, which it really like seems to swing in one direction or the other, like we're either really good at it or we're pretty bad at it. So I sometimes wish, I'm like, why isn't there like a more unified like source, or how could we create this material or put this material together? And then, but when you add the competition element, and I understand why some of it is a little more, I'd use the word gatekept, but like, you know, when you've worked really hard to put together your material, you may not necessarily want to share it with someone, and
or at least you want the credit for it, and you don't always know if that's going to happen. I think that's the biggest thing as far as what has happened with the whole gatekeeping, and there's not a good resource that we can have a shareable, credible library, if you will, for that. Right. There's definitely independent stuff, but for the most part, you know, that's actually something, you know, there's definitely a need for that. And see if we can, as a community, work towards that.
Yeah. And I think, though, the biggest detriment to what we're talking about, and this is something that we could literally talk about until next decade, is losing what everybody has worked on. Right. So we've had people on this podcast who have, you know, we haven't necessarily published, you know, kind of these conversations, but in a nutshell have essentially told us that, you know, people have passed away and their families who perhaps didn't understand the intensity of their work kind of just threw it away. Right. Like maybe had said to like, oh yeah, we had a box of like journals and old tapes and we just kind of threw it away.
Can you imagine the things that have been thrown away?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it makes sense. Like, look, I've had parents clear out. My parents have cleared out my grandparents' homes when they passed. Like, you reach a point where you're like, you just got to throw this junk away. Got to get
exactly.
rid of it. Exactly. I fully understand. Like, but the things that we've lost, and you know, now we have the ability to digitally archive. And I know there are a lot of people that have done major work on you know, digital archiving, like a lot of people in academia, and I can't remember all of their names, but I have a lot of these things you know, bookmarked and whatnot. But every time you find it, it's so exciting, and it really is kind of, it's like the history major part of my brain turns on, and I'm like, could we make like a larger database?
I think you're right about the idea of gatekeeping, and it's not always done intentionally. It can be like unintentional, but I do think that there are some people, and this has been an episode, I think, kind of like when we interviewed Kostas Mitzis, I think he hit really hard on this. Rula from AMC in Long Island hit really hard that like the reality is perhaps the styling of a set, sure, belongs to a director, right? That is the creative, stylistic, whatever. But the presentation of the ethima, or the presentation of the whatever it might be, the tradition, belongs to no one. It's not ours. You know, we didn't create that. Mm-hmm. It's our cultures. And I think when people keep that in mind, and like, if you're wondering, am I a gatekeeper? Ask yourself this question. Like, are you particular about the styling of the set? Mm-hmm. I can get that. I can understand that. And sure, like if you listen to or read FDF confessions, people are like, oh, this group must have been watching some YouTube videos. And I'm like, hey, you dorks, like, give it up.
Don't touch grass.
Right, exactly. But there's a difference between that and then gatekeeping.
Yeah.
The culture, that's totally. Where it's like wrong, you know?
And it's, and there's a fine line there, because I do think that it's important. Like, yeah, if you just, okay, I'm going to use this as a reference, like, because I've danced with Bobby from Newport News a lot and done their style of Cretan. If I was to then see, let's say, a group from up here or somewhere else, like come next year and do a set that really mimicked what I saw Bobby do at FDF last year, I would be like, hey, wait a second. Now, would I say Bobby owns that particular set? No, but the styling, the way it was put off, yeah, actually, in a way. And so, but then there's a gray area there, right? Even as I'm verbalizing that, I'm hearing, and what I'm saying is inherently problematic, because if you are presenting something and supposedly it is, air quotes, authentic,
sure,
then how could someone not sort of copy it if they're like, oh, I also want to do the same pig roast from Rumluki in 1926. It's going to kind of be the same thing. So yeah, the point is, at the end of the day, none of us do own this. Like, most of it belongs to, you know, peasants and history and things that none of us were there for. And we're like LARPing as our ancestors, as my friend likes to say. it's hard to say that anyone owns it, or you see who they hired, you know, what teacher was hired, and you bring that teacher over the next year from Greece and they teach it that style. Then are you, I don't know. Yeah. So it's a fine line. And to zoom out, like, I could see that with my retreat business. Like, I've had some people reach out to me and say, and for listeners, I do, you know, wellness and cultural retreats in Greece. I've been doing them in some fashion, either teaching or leading them since 2018. And I don't own doing retreats in Greece. People have been doing retreats in Greece since before I was born. Right. The caveat is that I've had some people reach out to me and say, like, hey, can I talk to you about your retreats? I'm like, yeah, sure. What do you mean? Do you want to come? They're like, well, I want to do retreats in Greece. I'm like, okay, cool. And then I'm like, I'll talk to you about it, but like at my consulting fee, I'm not going to give you a decade of research for free. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of also the difference, right? Like, if XYZ teacher goes and teaches someone and they're being compensated for it, also who cares if the people copy it? You know, the material was handed off in like a fair exchange. I mean, we're not really able to separate this from capitalism, because musicians cost money, teachers cost money, plane tickets cost money. It's just the reality that we live in, because we're not in like an isolated village in Epiros, you know?
Right. And honestly, people's time is their most precious commodity, right? So
yeah. Huge.
I have no problem with like people charging to do a workshop. Like, I actually think it's irrational to expect, and I don't think people necessarily do this, but you're right that like, if you're imparting some of your wisdom, especially if it's like on the business side of things, like if they were to ask a consultant for that, they'd be paying a lot of money per hour to talk to that person. So
I
think that's okay. I think that's protecting your space. And I think, people might be a little hot under the collar about that, but if they were in your position, I think they would feel the same way.
Oh, yeah. You know? It's like I've spent money to go do on-site visits, for example. I've made spreadsheets. It's a lot of time, and time, as we know, is money. So yeah.
Talk to us a little bit more about your retreats, not how to build one, how to book one, but especially the one that's happening in 16 days or something like that, which BT Dubs have I'm not so even excited. Started packing.
Yeah, me neither. It's going to be fine. We're going to have to track the weather till the last minute. So I do retreats and trips in Greece centered around wellness and culture. The one that you'll be joining on in March is actually zero connection to wellness explicitly, aside from the fact that I think it's going to be an experience that will help us live well. But we are going to Apokrias on Skiros. And I'm very, very excited for that. You know, a lot of Greek Americans, and maybe people will get mad at me for saying this, but I've observed this, they don't really know about Apokrias. And again, we're all like in the Greek dance world, it's a bubble. We have blinders on. You step out of that world, people don't really know much. Or they see something on Instagram that like, why is that guy wearing that big furry hat? Like, what's what's going on here? So I had the joy and privilege of going to Apokrias in 2020, right before the world shut down, with Stacy and Dr. Christo Papakostas and his group out of Yanina, and we went to Nausa, and it was a top three life experience for me, hands down. Like, it was, everything about it was incredible. And after that trip, Stacy and I were like, we got to do this again. So fast forward, we lived through a pandemic and a few life-changing experiences. And now here we are, I guess, 4 years later, finally going back and doing an organized Apokrias trip. And we brought on Aristula Toli, who's going to help us with sort of knowing when things are happening and to follow the Ethima and maybe some other surprises. We're hoping to see people like get dressed. And she's going to do a workshop for us as well, because, for example, I don't actually know very well like the dances of Skiros. So yeah, I'm looking at it as like a full blown, it's almost more of like a trip or experience and a retreat, but I'm really, really excited about it, because I find that like when you bring people together in Greece, and then you've given it a little bit of structure, so the people on the trip, like, you could go to Skiros and have fun, but you're going to be a little lost. Like, that was the aha moment when we were in Nausa. It helped so much that
Christo, you're not just aimlessly wandering around.
Yeah, and we knew where to go, and we were taken somewhere early in the morning to go watch a guy get dressed. I would have never had any idea how to do that. We went up to, like, when they went into the Marhio to do the handshake, like, we got to see all this stuff that it's like, oh, you need someone who kind of knows. So that's the idea for that. And I'm really excited to share it. We have a great group of people coming, and, you know, all that good stuff that we love, like culture and community and all of it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I'm pumped. I can't wait. I'm really excited. To download Airflix, because they have all these, some of them are like new, they played like the episodes over the weekend, whatever, but you can watch all the old Toalati Disease episodes. And
my dreams is always be on that show. I'm like, how do I
ditto
person who hangs out on a Latitis use and then, like, you know, drinks a glass of wine and gets up and dances? Like, why is that not my job?
Girl, any of our I would sell everything right now. Like, sorry, dog, you're gonna go live with Gaga and Papu, Odie. You'll be fine. But there's one from, I think it was from the last season that aired, and it's all about Skiros, and they show some of the, you know, the traditions and stuff like that. And I was watching it and
getting very excited.
Yes, and also getting emotional. Like, it's emotional. I'm looking forward to that, you know.
So, well, these things are so laden with meaning and layer, and that's another thing that I will say, and maybe here's where I'm a little need to be careful, but sometimes in my experience, the meaning of what we were doing was not often taught. I don't know how y'all feel. Like, yes. We were taught to Greek dance very well, exceptionally well. And when I started doing my open level classes, I would talk a lot at the beginning of them because I wanted to lay context for things to make it a little more intentional and be like, what, and just talk about like why we're doing what we're doing, or talk about the styling maybe in a little more like metaphorical language, you know, or just like infuse it with a little inspiration. It's like when I was at La Grafia last year, I would never say who because they're an incredibly knowledgeable teacher, but we did this workshop, and I won't say the region because it'll give it away. And I walked out of the workshop being like, all right, I learned 7 ways to do XYZ dance, but like the person never told me why. Or they never, I have now a PDF that they wrote with all this, you know, in Greek. And I do read Greek actually, but it's not my native language. But like, why aren't we infusing our classes with a little more information? Like, it's cool to learn 7 ways to dance this dance, but like, can you explain to me why? Or is there a story? Like, where's the story?
Yeah.
I know nothing. This person is an expert. I'm like, I was wanting so much more from them because I'm like, I know they know. I don't know anything compared to this person. But like, why aren't they telling me?
I wonder if they realize that's important to people.
I was going to say that I found that important in myself when I started teaching and realized that. And so I started making it a point myself to, you know, give more context. But the problem was, yeah, a lot, it's almost like this, just a progression where nobody really did that before, whether it's we didn't have the knowledge. I mean, we did, but I think we lost sight of why we do things. And you can say that about many traditions. You know, it's almost like it's become a habit rather than having intention behind it, like you said.
That's such a good point. Do you think, Nico, or both of your opinions, that's because so much of it was just like, okay, we go do Greek dance practice to learn the steps, to perform at the festival or to dance at HDF, and so much of the focus was on doing it, just getting it right, maybe?
I think so. I think there's a lot of stuff that plays into it. But it's, again, like I said, it's not just Greek dance. It's other traditions that we have, whether it's in the church or whether it's in, you know, cultural stuff. And like apokreos, realistic, the word apokreos, you know, it's the last time you have meat. And so it's a big festival, you know. I mean, do people understand that? Like, this is why we're doing it. We're about to go into the fast. You know, again, a lot of the Greek culture ties in with the religion. And so it's something, again, it was just like, oh, apokreos. And then we, you know, in being in America, it's like, oh, it's Greek Halloween. So it's like, oh, we dress up and you guys, it's like, no, time out.
I don't like that as a description at all.
Oh, I've heard it before. So I'm bringing it up. Too. And if we can bring it out there and make people aware, like, no, it's something different. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's important is the education. And because we didn't have that, I think, again, it's great that you're talking about this, that, you know, that you're making it a point. And I've been seeing more and more people, at least of our generation, that are teaching and putting on, you know, like a Laografia, all these conferences and whatnot. They are doing that more so. But again, everyone's different. Some people might not find it important or say, my time is worth showing you the dance. You can go back and read the 20 pages I've written, you know. Mm-hmm. Again, that's also challenging because not everyone's going to sit there and be able to understand what's been written in Greek. And Google Translate can only get so far.
It can only get so far. You lose a lot of context. And again, my reading is actually very good, but there's a lot of words that I'm like, you need, and you Google the word and you're like, I don't know. Like the context is lost. Mm-hmm. Look, I think it's also part of a generational thing to tie it back to this also Instagram thing where we're seeing every day, I feel like there's a new Greek dance Instagram page, which I love. And at some point I'm also like, okay, you got it. Once again, like Greeks just shooting off in 80 directions. I'm like, okay, let's maybe have like fewer and then tell the story really well. But who am I to say? Someone could say that about me. People now, I think it's like where we are just in time, like people are more interested in going back and learning. It's a lot easier, I think, now to be ethnic in America than it was when my mother was growing up. So for context, absolutely. I'm a millennial. If you're listening to this, you have no idea how old I am. Don't worry, I'm not Gen Z, but I am a millennial. And which means my mom's generation is like the kids of the people who lived through World War II. And I talk all the time about how it's like a luxury that they get to be cool to be ethnic. For my that generation, and maybe even to people our generation now, depends where you live, it was not like cool. You wanted to kind of...
You wanted to assimilate, I've actually had that conversation with one of my buddies. His dad, grew up in America, second generation, basically, grew up in America, and you were American. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't anything else. You didn't want really to be anything else. Like, you were super proud. Yeah, assimilate. Like, no, that's what we are. Even to the point where some of the immigrants wouldn't speak Greek or wouldn't teach their children Greek because of that whole thing. Like, no, our children need to assimilate. They need to become American or wherever in the diaspora they went.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you see a lot with like the Italian diaspora, like not a lot of Italians speak Italian. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a fact. This is just straight up facts. I have a lot of Italian American friends. Not one of them speaks a lick of Italian. Mm-hmm. It's very, very different. So,
you know, like even growing up, I mean, I was the most ethnic person in my high school for a while.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, Maria, are you Indian? You know, because that's all they kind of knew.
It makes you feel better. My sister got that a lot too. Yeah. My older sister.
I believe it.
It is what it is. But
I have a Greek book club, and we talk about this frequently. This topic.
Yeah.
We're like being asked, like, "What are you?"
Yeah.
I will say this, and I would say this on the record. Like, I feel like when I went to undergrad, I studied at the University of Virginia, and you know, it's a pretty. It can be rather and was like a very preppy, elitist atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I feel like when I was there, I kind of watered down my ethnic side to fit in with this more WASPy crowd. Mm-hmm. And when I came out of college, I really missed it. And maybe it was almost that watering it down for a little bit that then made me swing back in full force. And mm-hmm. I joke make being Greek my entire personality, but no, but actually it like might've mm-hmm. been the thing that then drew me back to it so strongly. It's not like I really hit it, but I wasn't interacting with it. I wasn't going to church. UVA didn't have a Hellenic club at the time that was mm-hmm. active. I would go back and Greek dance at the festival and stuff, but I couldn't do competition because of mm-hmm. college. So yeah, I remember even feeling then like to fit in with my WASPy friend group, like watering it down a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we're lucky to be able to straddle these worlds. And we've said this on countless episodes that it's almost like, if you really think about it, all this stuff, the HDFs, the FDFs, the workshops, the this, the that, the third, are like one generation away from not existing. Yeah. And it's not that people now are not putting in a ton of effort. Absolutely. But it's that carrying of the torch or that next step, the people kind of coming up that need to, mm-hmm. you know, make the commitment to kind of carry the stuff on. And I get it. Like, I think we all went through that at some point in our lives where, whether it was because of the issues that come with being involved in Greek dance, because we know that there are, you know what I mean? And just being a little bit like drained by it, that you need to step back and take a break, but you return back to it because it's the drive is deep in here. It's not superficial, you know?
I actually hear that from a lot of my dancers in New York, because again, most of them are people who have relocated to New York, not all, but most. And it's a lot of people who are like, okay, I miss it. Like I went to college, I did this, I've been working on starting my career. And now it's like, I hear it so much. I miss like singing a song at FDF, you know? And I think that's a really cool and special thing. So I'm like, anyone doing anything to keep this alive, to me, is doing really important work, mm-hmm. honestly. And people come to me and they're like, can you teach my kid Zorba? And I'm like, no. You know, that sounded like a hater. I like, you know, you can teach your kid Zorba. I actually don't know Zorba, so that's why I won't teach them Zorba. But if I did know it, I would say we're, you know, doing this in the context of exploring like mid 20th century Greek identity through film. Like, it would have to be contextualized properly.
And the kids are going to be like, what?
Like, we're hot. You're fired. We're finding a Greek dance teacher. I'm like, Florina. They're like, what?
Florida?
Right, exactly. Exactly. And there's no counts. Just follow my beep.
This is the most awkward thing to the Western ear possible, but just go with it.
Right. Forget your numbers.
Boom. Yeah, it's interesting though, like to see how there's this like renewed popularity online, like all these accounts like Bunny Hirizo and like all of them. It's really neat to see, which I think highlights something else that I try to talk about in my classes. I'm like, I'll ask people, I'm like, hey, have you been to a Bunny Hiri in the summer in Greece? And I seem to get a very like varied response to that. People either like really have, because they were fortunate enough to grow up in a family where they went back to, I don't know, whatever. Like, I have a lot mm-hmm. of friends from like Garies, Arajo, Valaconia. So they like really grew up going, and in fun place, by the way, really grew up doing that. And a lot of people are like, no. And I remember the first time I went on my own to Icaria, like that actually changed my life. That wasn't something that was like passed down to me. It wasn't some inherited thing. Like, I sought it out. I went and I had this huge realization that, whoa, there's still a youth culture around this, or there's been a revival in the youth culture around this. Like maybe in the 80s, it wasn't cool. And now it's like cool again. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to see how Greek dance is blossoming in Greece. Cause I think for the longest time, it was kind of not that it wasn't ever there, but it was insular, right?
Was like,
in Kathros, it was like rare that you would hear anything other than Carpathian dances at Panagiotis. And now like you'll hear and do Sirta and stuff like that. Like, and people would argue like, oh, there's Carpathian style. I'm like, that's one great, you know? but like, I don't know. I think, again, it goes back to, we're so dang lucky to be able to like be so involved in this. And a big part of it, I think, is because of being in the States and that drive to hold on to this, you know?
Oh, for sure. Where they don't know how good they have it in a way. But I can also see how for a lot of people, it's just not cool. You know, Greece was Europeanizing and modernizing and all of these things.
Yeah,
they're like
that old stuff. Yeah, nobody. Yeah, we don't need to.
I get it. I fully get it. And it's also not for everyone. Like, not every Greek person needs to be into Greek dance. Not every Greek person likes to dance. It's not like, again, we've taken something and we've placed it wildly out of context. Like, if you look at like HDF or FDF in the aggregate and you zoom out, it's like, what?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
amazing, but what is it, you know? I was in Amorgos this summer where I did my retreat, and I'll be going back again this year. And Amorgos, you guys probably know, has some really beautiful music. And actually, Nikos Ikonomidis, who's my personal favorite violu player, I call him, I'm like the father of Nisiotika to me. he in Gail's book, like Nisiotika, he talks about like there's a whole chapter called The Importance of Amorgo. And when I heard that music there, like in Amorgo on the island, I was like, yes, there's like a magic to this. Like, I see it, I get it. And it was very cool to see once again, like the kids there, like the kids from Amorgos really knowing their dances. And then talking to a friend there who was like, oh yeah, you can see the people from Chora dance like this. The people from Megali dance like this. Kids from Katapola, we dance a little different. And like, and he's saying this to me, and there's a reason I said this, like the full circle is like, they don't appreciate it. I'm like, what you just said could be like cited as like, I think, and then the research is a whole other topic. Like, I don't understand what counts as research and not anymore, but I'm not an expert, so I'll leave that to the experts. But like that right there, like, how is that not research? Like, you grew up here, 30 something years, you've observed this, you know this, you've danced it, and you're telling me right now, like, look, see, he's from Ayali. And I'm like, oh yeah. And now I can see it. So it's still like alive. You don't want those nuances to get lost either in a way.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a tangent. But like, I think they sometimes don't even appreciate what they have. Like, I would have never noticed that without just being there.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. An exciting project that we're going to be working on with Druso Papakosa actually is utilizing the transcription from all of these episodes, all of our podcasts, in his academic setting. With the intent, I know, right? Of like,
he's the best.
He's so cool. I just texted him today.
When you listen to this later, I want you to know I think you're the best.
Right? Fan club. Priso Papa Gosa fan club. He's just such a genuine guy, and he's, he wants, the point of the research is like Greek dance outside of Greece.
Yeah.
So it's like
anthropological. It's like that. Perspective.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's what he's done a lot of work on that, right? Like him and I think Aristula too.
Yeah. Yeah. And Katerina Vretos, who we've had on, I think she was on season two of the podcast. She lived for a while in Qatar and taught Greek dance there and, you know, had a group there. And
no, I mean, it's very wild when you tell Greek people in Greece, and again, they're all more aware of it now too because of Instagram, but like what we're doing and explaining it to them. It's like, it's very funny. It's a funny thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, I think about all the time, like my guys' generation, they're like they're pretty much like the last generation, and probably your Yigadis. I don't know their ages. We're all a little different, but like, oh wow, the generation that actually remembers what it was like to live in the villages pre World War II. They're dying rapidly. They're about gone. And not to be too heavy, but I'm watching my Yiga right now lose her memory completely. And it's wild though, because when you have Alzheimer's, you forget the new and you remember the old. And she can talk about things in the Koryo, but she's like forgetting current reality. But I'm like, there's something, sorry, it's like a little emotional, but it's like eerily poetic that this generation is the only people who, because when we go back, even for my mom going back, it's like people had fled the villages to go to Athens or to Germany or to Australia or the UK to find work. The people who lived in that pre-punctured world that we, again, almost like cosplay at FDF or HDF, unless you're doing a set from the 80s, you know, they're dying out. So how do we then contextualize that? Like, could I go do a set from like 2019 Amorgos?
It's a very heavy question.
These are the questions I want answers to from the judges. Or like post-crisis Ikaria, pretty interesting. Huge youth culture there. I think that's a moment in time.
I mean, who's to say?
I have questions. I have no answers.
Yeah, I don't have an answer either. But who's to say? Like, you're right. Like, what if somebody puts on something like modern day as their set?
I mean, if you can do a set from the 80s and people in your group were alive then, and like, could have feasibly been in a Panagiri in the 80s in Greece, couldn't you say like, hey, there was a really cool youth culture in Ikaria post-crisis. A lot of Greek kids couldn't afford to travel out of Greece anymore. They started going to the island. These Panagiri started getting really popular. You started seeing this like huge, you know, I'm just using an example. But, like, that was a thing. That was a moment.
Sure. And who's to say that that can't be a set?
I don't know.
Like, yeah. Some jorts.
a bunch of hippies, a bunch of Icarian hippies. I mean, it's a thing because it is like a subculture. It's really like definitely a subculture.
Who's to say that that won't be something 20 years from now?
Contextualize it. Like, there was a crisis in Greece. No one had money. Disillusioned youth going to rediscover Greek dance. I don't know. It's definitely a thing.
I know. It's wild, actually. But I mean, even, you know, if you think about like what's on TV nowadays, right? Like, obviously, Alakoudisios is not, I don't think they're like actively filming anymore. But if you think about that, in theory, somebody could plan that as a set.
Enact that. What if you reenacted? That's pretty meta. You're like, I'm going to do a reenactment. Of a reenactment. I mean, in theory, we could get there one day.
If you do that at HDF or FDF, you heard it here first. I want you to put that in your research.
You know what? And I am actively keeping the material.
Right, exactly. You cannot download Ertflix. Okay, I'm going to block you from it. It's free, but I'm going to call up Mr. Ert himself. I don't know. They don't allow it.
I'm going to call Mr. Alati Juzis, that one guy. They're looking so happy.
Yes. Exactly. Take it all off the internet.
Do you think you could consult?
He probably can. I wonder what his consulting fee is. Probably some good food, because he just looks really happy when they feed him on the show.
Him drinks. Like, you just bring him to FDF, wine and dine, and he'll be fine.
All right. So we're starting our own group. We're going to be the super meta. I'm just kidding.
Wow.
I know. That took a turn. It's been a long week.
we typically do.
No, because what did I get myself into?
In all honesty, I'm just like, where can this, because I feel like now there's this like quest of like finding new material. And look, I am once again coming at this from like, I grew up dancing in this. I have never actually directed a group that's like gone to FDF or HDF. I've been to them many times. I've danced with them as a kid, as an adult. I have a lot of friends who direct groups. All I say is the more I know, the more I feel like I don't know anything. Like, the more I know, the less I know is my personal feeling about life and Greek dance. But yeah, at a certain point, it's like the discoverable material or like the criteria for research, like where does that, mm-hmm. where does that go? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good question. And definitely. And who makes that determination?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
It's definitely subjective.
Very much so. Very much yeah. so. And I think it's interesting because there are a lot of academic scholars in this area too, but they're kind of on the fringe. You know what I mean? Like they might be musicians or they might be people who attend these events, but they're not actively in a group, directing a group, like all that kind of stuff. And it's, you almost wonder like if they could come into the world a little bit more, if maybe nice. There could be the creation of something like these are research standards for Greek dance. You know, we have it. Most professions have that as like,
right.
you know, this is what qualifies research as solid in our profession. And I think we probably informally have that in Greek dance, but
yeah. But do we, mm-hmm. I don't know. I once as like an, I was about to use a bad word, as like a teenager, was at HDF and we were being shuttled from like a dance to a hotel or something. And we ended up in one of the vans with one of the judges. And I, as a teenager, was just asking a lot of questions. That's just who I was. I did it in Sunday school. I did it everywhere. I wasn't afraid to like kind of poke. And I remember asking the judge, I was like, well, how do you determine, how can you say what you were just saying, like, what is the mm-hmm. standard for the judging? I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't answer my question. And as like a little snot-nosed teenager, I was so angry. I was really mad about that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how you can, like, if there's not, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I don't think you're the only person. Like, I think, again, going back to like FDF confessions, which, you know, don't kick me off the page, whoever runs that. But, you know, people ask that question. Do they ask it in a way that's like how we just asked it? Likely no. How you just asked it? No. But there's a little bit more oomph maybe behind how they're asking
the
it.
Ask.
Yeah. Right.
A little more attitude.
Right. But, you know, I think it depends who you talk to. And I think like there are some people who I talk to who are like, I've been there with my camcorder and I've experienced this. I've lived through that. So that to me is like first, that's a primary source, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then what's next after that? I think that's kind of what you're getting to. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you're not there now and you can't go back in time unless some people have that capability that I don't know of, right? Yeah. Like, how do you, you know?
Right.
What's
like,
next?
None of us were at like the Hurun Uchara in 1926. So, like, how do you judge that exactly?
Right.
But mm-hmm. And in yeah. a lot of cases, there is archival footage or there are people who studied with elders. And I remember thinking that too when I was first thinking I wanted to start teaching. And then I was a little like, well, who am I to teach? And then I was like, well, wait, who am I not to? Because I'm very open about what I don't know. If I don't know something, I'll say, hey guys, we're doing like kanyatiko, here's kanya style. If you go over here, just so you know, they're going to dance a little differently. I'm not teaching that, or I don't know. Or I'll say, I'm teaching this a little more mm-hmm. generic. Like, I think because it's like, also as a woman, you're very like afraid of saying things wrong because there's a tendency for people to like be a little more, hard on you, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like so afraid of doing or saying something wrong when I teach. So I just don't teach things if I'm not sure about them. And also I'm more like teaching like beginners. So it's just getting them to dance sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it's, you'd be yeah. amazed. It's like, you can't even get to styling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's that. But yeah, I don't know. I wonder where it all goes. But it is something. I will say though, there is like a je ne sais quoi when you can see something and say that was good,
mm-hmm.
like that was good. Or that group just has really strong dancers, and it doesn't matter how hard XYZ group works. Dancing has that je ne sais quoi to it. I think that soul to it, where you'll look at a group sometimes, you're just like, wow, like they have a lot of really strong guys or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like I look at my friends in Sacramento and I'm always like, when I watch their guys do it, I'm like, wow. But like that takes like a certain culture of having done that style for years. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard thing in New York without having the more established dancers to look up to. Like for my kids, I sat them down for one lesson. We literally did a viewing party. I was like, we're going to watch videos of Greek dance because they didn't grow up. Like I grew up on the side of the stage, literally like watching Bobby and Stacy and being like, wow, I want to dance like them, you know? And my kids don't have that here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope they will one day. But it's hard when you don't like see it growing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely.
I feel like this was like the deepest, one of the deepest episodes we've had in a little bit. Right, Nico? I don't know.
It's been a while since we've really gone this kind of, deep.
Yeah.
That's what I like to do. I like to ask questions.
Good. No, no.
It's good.
That's what we need to do. We need to, because if you don't ask questions, then you're not going to learn anything new realistically.
And look, I can also say that sometimes you ask those questions in the Greek dance world, like you get shut down sometimes. So thank you guys for being open to talk about it and to go there, because sometimes I do ask, I feel like these questions, and that is maybe its own form of like the power structure or whatever. It's like, well, I don't know. This question makes me uncomfortable. So just shut it down. And I'm the expert on this and you don't know. And I know, and that's it. And that's how it is.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is I think there's not too many people like that around
anymore.
Yeah. There still are, but
things are changing, but yeah, again, I feel like anyone who's doing something with this, like props to y'all for doing even just this podcast and getting people out there. And again, I'm like, I feel like I'm just indebted to people at this point who have taught me so much. And the more I teach, the more I like want to keep teaching. And the more I'm like, wow, anyone who has built a Greek dance program and kept it going are a soldier, because all of you, it takes so much love and effort. And like even the programs that go and they perform and they don't place, and I'm like, wow, that was really good. What? You corralled 30 kids on stage? Come on.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask then, what advice would you give for beginners? Whether it's to direct, whether it's to do what, at least the first step, do you think? Or maybe the most important?
Okay. I would say number one is no one's going to come and tell you you're a Greek dance teacher. There is no certification course to become a Greek dance teacher. Now, actually, that's a lie. Some people just get thrown into it. I was like, this is totally wrong. I'm coming at the context of like living in New York City, coming from Virginia, very different situation. But like, if you want to do it then, so maybe here's a better way of rephrasing that. If you're like, hey, I want to teach Greek dance. I feel like either I have a POV or I have a passion for this. And maybe you've just been tapped in your community. Cause sometimes you just get tapped cause you're there. Let's be real. Like the program, they're like, we need someone to teach these middle schoolers. You locally go. Now, I would say if you're interested, like speak up and don't be afraid to speak up. Cause I think for a long time I had like a lot of like imposter syndrome sort of around it. And maybe there would be cases where like, if I was to move somewhere that had a really established program, I would come into it extremely humbly and be like, hey, I'd love to help. Could I assist you in some way? So just being very aware. And then I would also say like having respect for like the existing communities around you is really, really big. Like when we started our Upper East Side class, we were like, well, we're not going to do it the night of the Upper West Side class because they have an open. And of course, ours is different. It's intermediate advanced, but like they have an open level class that night. I don't want to mess with that because that program exists. So yeah, I'd say like have respect for the communities. Don't be afraid to speak up if you want to do it or you feel like you have something, because for me, again, it was kind of weird. Like people just started coming to me about it at a certain point. I was like, I'm really passionate about this, but I'm not someone who's run a program that's competed for 15 years, you know. Mm-hmm. I do think I have something to offer as a teacher, and that like my teaching style is more fun, mm-hmm. educational, but I'm sure that if someone who knows something came in and watched us do Thracian at practice, they could definitely rip it to shreds. I'm sure. Like we're still just, these are all very like nascent program phases. So, and then the other thing I would say is like, be curious and seek things out and don't be afraid to ask questions of people. But then when you do go to those people again, like go to them with respect. Like if I go to Lindsay from Sacramento, I'm like, Lindsay, do you have the bandwidth to send me some music from Mumluki right now? You know, like being just like respectful. Yes. When you go to people is a big thing. And then I've never really had anyone though turn me down. And then also be generous with your resources. Like someone asked me for something the other day and I was like, oh, I actually have a full Dropbox of Cypress from La Grafia. So I'm going to share this with you. And like that reminder of like, so I've definitely had people come to me and be like, hey, come do this thing for me. And then I like help them out a bunch and then like they like ghost and you're like, oh, well, that was a little strange. Not a good way to be in community, because to bring it back to what you said almost at the beginning of this, like this doesn't belong to any of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It belongs to predominantly peasants who are surviving, and it's steeped in ways of life and survival and existence that none of us have really like experienced. These people were so connected to like the cyclical nature of existence, and that's why they were doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
And we get to keep it alive, which I do not take lightly. It's like a form of stewardship, like stewarding this so it doesn't die out, because, and I'm sure from an academic perspective, you could argue with this, but like, to me, it's also an art form. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it's just shit that peasants were doing, you know, around a threshing field at some point, but like, it's really like an art form. Like, yeah, we don't get married in the same way. So this anathema like about marriage doesn't make any sense in a current modern day context. So now we take it out of that context and I'm like, we're keeping something really cool alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it is artistic. Like if you look at Greek dance from the costumes and the, you know, like where those came from. Right. And like the harboring of people's wealth into what they wore, you know, the textiles and all that kind of stuff. I think it very much was. And, you know, perhaps that is a little bit lost on people or could be, right. You know, but even just thinking about the fact that people, we interviewed someone a few weeks ago and he made the point of, you know, people in this area would work in the mines, the men, they would come home after a long week. They weren't like hopping and skipping and jumping when they were dancing. They were exhausted from working, you know, and they were dancing. And that's why it's this way. That's why the art is that way. And when you think about it like that.
Context. I'm like, tell me that when you're teaching me the dance, mm-hmm. like, I want to know why.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's so Absolutely. Cool. I mean, yeah. Also sad, but cool. And yeah, to your point, like about the costumes, I think, and this is a bit tangential, but like when I think about how all Greek women had to like create, not all, but many Greek women had to, they worked with the looms. My great grandmother made a lot of rugs. They made their, you know, the kentimata and stuff. I'm like, Greek women get no credit for the fact that they were all artists. And I know that it was craft, and I'm not going to go into the academic delineation between like art and craft, but like, how often do we take something that was women's work and we call it craft? Mm-hmm. And like, they were art, like, I don't like learning how to use a loom is hard. Mm-hmm. How is that not art? What? Like creating your own patterns. That's art. There's so much, so much to it.
And
even things are like,
sorry.
Even things like the stitching and all the other details that went in to these garments or just anything that they were making.
Oh, look, I can't do that. I don't know.
I can knit scarves, but if you make me to knit like a hat, it will grow in size. Like I always forget to drop the stitches. So you have to really focus on that.
Yeah. Or how about those ghosty socks, you know?
Shoot, mine would be like a thigh warmer by the time I was done with it. Just keep on growing.
The ski socks and the ski braids.
Oh. I love it. So no, you're good. And it's so funny because if people don't know what we're talking about, Google it, you'll get it. No, you're totally good.
Heavy socks.
Right. Leg warmers of the 80s before they became leg warmers, the precursor to 80s leg warmers. if you really think about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
That's pretty spot on.
Yeah, basically. So where can people find you on the interwebs? Tell people where they can find you.
And so they can stay up to date with, you know, what you have going on, your classes, or even your trips and things like that.
Thank you. Great question. So over on Yamas, which we spell YIA.MAS for myriad SEO reasons, that is our Instagram, YIA.MAS, also www.yia-mas.com. Great places to start. Yamas is also, we just cross post most of our stuff to Facebook. I have a personal Instagram, which if you search Yamas, you can find, but Yamas is really the place. And I do a lot of writing there about not only Greek traditions, but even ancient philosophies and other folkloric things. And if anything, if you're like not as nerdy, although if you've made it to the end of this podcast, congrats, like you're a super nerd if you're still listening to this talk right now. But, you know, there's a lot of just pretty pictures of Greece. And I try to, a big side note, inspiration for Yamas was to show the side of Greece beyond the blue and white, beyond just that. And so I try to show different regions and different traditions and talk about different things. And if you go through that Instagram, there's just a lot of writing. And that's where we announce all of our workshops and retreats. So the retreats range everything from more like proper yoga retreat on a Greek island, where we will do a Greek dance class, but like it's going to be very fun and light in all levels, to like the Sapokrias trip, which is really for like people that are interested in culture. And I'm sure we'll do one next year. So keep an eye out if you're missing Skiros. And yeah, come on retreat. They're a great way to meet people, connect with the land, connect with the culture. I say it's like a vacation you don't need a vacation from, because everything's planned for you. You're pretty much like fed, do some movement, you do some mindfulness. You don't need to be like a big yogi to come. Like my mom came last year, although she's pretty big yogi these days, but you know, all ages, all genders, all everything, come. Workshops happen in New York and online. I just did a workshop in Chicago. So yeah, you can keep an eye out on all those things.
Love it.
Excellent. Thank you.
No, yes. Thank you guys. Thank you for the lively conversation.
I know, right? I feel like my brain, it feels a little bit lighter, like in a good way.
Good.
You know, and it's funny because I've been staring at this business card from somebody who was at HDF, and he's so sweet, and he's from Leros, and we had some great conversations. And the tagline on his business card is, "Do you want to meet the alternative? ... Leros." And I'm just like, that is such an island. Like, come to me beyond the blue. I'm going to show you beyond the blue and white. I'm going to show you the real deal.
Wow. Respect.
So much respect.
Solid.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you again.
Thank you guys.
Really great.
Thank you guys.